Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Today we have Senator Gillibrand coming right up. We have actor Jeffrey Wright today. He's involved in some interesting coronavirus relief work involving hospitals and restaurants in Brooklyn. And we'll probably wrangle in a question or two about Westworld or Boardwalk Empire or Angels in America for Jeffrey Wright. And we have the great Wynton Marsalis today, later this hour, to talk about the new world of live streaming concerts that you can watch at home, including ones from his place, Jazz at Lincoln Center. So a lot that I think you will enjoy this morning on The Brian Lehrer Show. And listeners, this is the final day of our three-day spring membership drive, and I won't dwell on it now as Senator Gillibrand is standing by, but thank you for your support over the first 2 days. You know, we've cut this way down from our usual 9-day spring drive because it doesn't feel right to us to interrupt our coverage and information flow that much right now with the virus situation changing our lives under our feet so much every day and unpredictably every day. We are responsible to stay on it. So just a 3-day brief interruption to ask for your contributions. And today's the day. It's over already. So I'll just give you the phone number one time and the web address one time right now as we ask for your support for your public radio station and all of our extra coronavirus expenses. Most people donate through the homepage of our website. The button is right there on the front page at WNYC.org. Or it's just as easy if you would rather use your phone and speak to a human being. And that number is 888-376-WNYC, 888-376-9692. Thank you all so much for being listener supporters, if you can. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And now to New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Senator, we always appreciate you making yourself accessible to our listeners. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be on your show.
Last time you were on, we had a caller named Scott, who's a paramedic, who called in with a suggestion to help both paramedics and homeless people in New York. And you had promised him to look into the situation that he was raising. I'm going to replay the beginning of that call, and I understand you have an update. So here we go with this clip from last month as I took this call. Scott in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Hi, Scott.
Senator Brian, love you both. Yeah, I'm a paramedic in the city, and a couple of times over the weekend, I was called to COVID hotels. They're hotels that have mainly homeless people that have positive tests for COVID or just the symptoms. But anyway, they're there, they're stuck in their rooms alone, and they're not allowed to leave, and they have no access to basic over-the-counter medicines. Two of them just wanted some Tylenol. That's all they wanted. So these people, they're tying up the ambulances for no reason. They're registered nurses on site. They could easily give out any over-the-counter medications, but they don't have it. They just were not supplied with it. I don't know if it's a state thing or a FEMA thing, but for whatever reason, these nurses have nothing to give these people to take care of the symptoms of COVID. Is there any way we could get some supplies of basic over-the-counter medicines for these people?
So, listeners, that was Scott in Manhattan calling when Senator Gillibrand was here last month. And, Senator, I understand you have something to report.
Yes. So, of course, after the call, we followed up and we reached out to the relevant stakeholders at the city, and we got the policy changed so that providers would have the over-the-counter drugs available on site at each of the DHS COVID hotels. So your show is magic because it allowed me to take that concern and be able to get it fixed.
Yay. And that's a small story in the scheme of things, but is there a larger lesson in that about how rules meant to protect people sometimes have to be looked at differently in an emergency like this?
Absolutely. It also shows how important each one of our voices are. For Scott to lift up that question and that concern in a forum where somebody could do something about it is kind of what we all should be doing. We should all be lifting up worries, concerns, fears, and hopes for the future and asking stakeholders and lawmakers to do the right thing. And frankly, our democracy only works when regular people stand up and demand change. And so it's just, that's what government should be for people. And I'm grateful for Scott's call, and I'm grateful that I had the chance to talk to him on your show.
I'm also thinking of the hospital discharge rules for elderly patients who had been admitted from their nursing home facilities as maybe an example of this. The usual rules made sense, sending them back to the nursing homes upon discharge because that's who had the staff and facilities to care for them and they were living there. But in the coronavirus era, that did not make sense because of the risks in nursing facilities, but it didn't stop automatically. Now, that's a state policy, not federal, but I think this whole situation has lifted the veil on the underregulated nursing home industry and the risks to residents, even in normal times where the quality is hit or miss. Is there a call for new federal oversight of that industry now?
Well, yes. I mean, I sit on the Senate Aging Committee, and what you might not know is that the Trump administration right now is working to relax the regulations governing American
nursing
homes. I did
not know that. Whoa.
Yes, they're actually trying to relax them to take away the rules that were meant to curb deadly infections among elderly residents. And we know that nursing homes have been the center of this pandemic, and most of our deaths are at nursing homes. So it's outrageous that the administration's considering rolling back regulations. And I think in my committee, we need to have oversight hearings to just assess, you know, what are the policies in nursing homes? If we look at all the national deaths in every state, they tend to be focused in these hot spots of nursing homes. What could we do differently to protect our older citizens better? I have a bill called the Coronavirus Relief and Seniors for Seniors and People with Disabilities Act, which would create a nursing home watchdog, and that would give money for infection control plans and more reporting.
I'm glad you brought this up, because this is an issue that I have not seen or heard elsewhere in the press, and that obviously deserves more recognition and more attention. In fact, a lot of our listeners probably don't know that there is an aging committee in the Senate. Since it's a Republican majority Senate, who's the chairman of that committee?
It's Susan Collins, and the Democratic ranking member is Bob Casey. And we've been doing hearings over the last 2 years on issues of how we keep our older Americans healthier and safer. And now we need to turn an eye towards specifically what's happening in the nursing homes. The main federal regulator overseeing nursing homes proposed a rules change last summer before COVID came to light. And they put, that was a push because of all the lobbyists. There's so many lobbyists and campaign contributions from people that own nursing homes. And they tried to upend the regulatory framework we even have now. So that's one of the reasons why, Brian, I also fight for getting money out of politics. I think one of the biggest sources of corruption and bad policy in Washington is that money is just dumped into campaigns by special interests. And so if we could ever get to the place where we had publicly funded elections, we would at least have greater confidence that the work our lawmakers are doing are for the best interest of the public, not their campaign coffers.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, our guest. The Senate now has the next coronavirus relief bill that the House passed last week. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he wants to wait a while after spending $3 trillion so far and see how these earlier blocks of cash are being used, effectively or not. Is that a reasonable approach to you?
I think, I don't think Mitch McConnell is paying attention to what's happening in America. I think he's absolutely out of touch and in a bubble. And he doesn't understand that families are crippled and they can't do anything without income. They can't pay their rent. They can't pay their mortgage. They can't buy food for their kids. Our food banks have lines out the door. They have, in some cities, they have cars lining up for miles to get bundles of food. And so we are in a crisis. And what we need is more money for our state governments. We need more money for local governments and our tribal relief. We need more money for our healthcare system. We need more money for housing assistance. We need money for food, so we have more food assistance. And we need to help our first responders. We need a Heroes Fund, because one of the things we've seen that we should certainly talk about is the fact that our critical workers, who are disproportionately women and people of color, are bearing the brunt of this epidemic, and they're being paid among the lowest wages. So we want to have a Heroes Fund to give more resources directly to people who are on the front lines helping us.
How would that work?
So I have a couple of bills. One is to create just a Heroes Fund that would be a flexible fund to give them time and a half, so more wages, but also money if they have any other emergencies, if they have health emergencies, if they have housing emergencies, just really supporting the critical workers and create a bill. It would be a $200 billion fund for essential workers hazard pay. And then additional money would be in for COVID testing, tracing, and isolation efforts. It would make a difference. And so that the Heroes Fund would be very important if we could fund that.
And what kinds of workers would be included in that?
So it would be healthcare workers. It would be workers in grocery stores and in pharmacies, any worker that's doing emergency relief, EMTs, workers who are cleaning hospitals. Literally anybody who's on the front line of this would be eligible for that Heroes Fund. So that is something that I think is really important to be included. It was included in the House bill, and we want to make sure it's included in the Senate bill too.
Another one not getting a lot of attention, and I hear heads nodding out there. I can hear the heads nodding. Mm-hmm. I really can. Saying, yes, we need this for all these people, building service workers, everybody who is out there having to work right now to serve the people who have the privilege of staying home. I've been hearing from restaurant owners so hard hit who think the small business loan program needs to be revamped now that we realize for how long the restaurant industry is going to be transformed. The PPP loans, as they're called, are just for 2 months of stopgap expenses and require 75% of the money to go for payroll, which they say aren't 75% of the stopgap expenses to keep from going out of business while they're closed. Does the new bill include any revisions to that program for restaurants and other small businesses facing transformations longer than the 2 months?
The Senate bill isn't even started yet. So we're trying to, one of the things that I would like to do specifically for the restaurant industry and other small businesses that haven't been able to use these funds well, is right now it requires that you hire everybody back by June, and the restaurant industry, no one's going to be hired back in June. And if some restaurants open, it'll just be a skeleton crew because there's just not enough demand or a knowledge that people will go back to restaurants. So for those businesses and other small businesses around our state, we want more flexibility. We want to put provisions in that we want you to hire back those employees, but it might take you a year to do so. It might take you 2 years to do so. So giving you the flexibility of using the money in the way that you need to get back up and running with safeguards in place over time so that you can hire back those employees. So that's what we'd like to do, create more flexibility, and that's something I'm trying to do when we get to look at the Senate bill. But there's a lot I want to put in the Senate bill that didn't get in the House bill. For example, we want to have money for a health force. We want to actually fund the training of over two months, of 1 million workers to do the contact testing, tracing, to do the testing, eventually to do vaccinations and therapeutics. And now, right, states are having to do it by themselves and figure out how do we get this disease people trained. I would love that to be a federal program and run it under the CDC, because the CDC has the training, the capability, and the infrastructure in every state already. So I want to include that. And I also want to include more money for the post office. And I want to have postal banking, which would allow basically $9 billion to go into the Postal Service every year. And it also meets the need of the unbanked and underbanked around the country. And again, back to the thing we touched upon early, how this epidemic has really had a disproportionate negative impact on our lower income and communities of color. So we have to begin to right the wrongs that are generational and decades long. And one is just basic access to banking, to have a savings account or a checking account or a microloan or a home loan. Lower income families, 30% of Americans are unbanked or underbanked, and that creates a divide. And it's really been part of why we have this massive wealth gap in this country between Americans of color and white Americans. And it's just, it's morally wrong. So postal banking would fix both problems. It would create incentive to close the wealth gap in this country for Black Americans, as well as other communities of color, and it would allow the post office to be solvent so we could actually have our elections, because we really want to have vote by mail be secured for every state in the country by November, because COVID will still be with us and people should not have to choose between voting and protecting their lives.
Very interesting.
I'm going to work on getting that included too.
Proposal, especially with the election and the vote by mail imperative for many states, even if President Trump is trying to make stuff up to fight vote by mail. This is up to the states. This is not up to the president. And so enabling the post office sounds like a good idea to me. Before you go, and we're almost out of time, you're on the Armed Services Committee, I know, and Politico revealed this week that the Trump administration plans to end the deployment of 40,000 National Guard troops helping with coronavirus relief work after 89 days. That would be early next month. That's one day shy of the 90-day deployment, which would give them additional pension points and education credits under the GI Bill. It looks intentional just to deny the National Guard troops stepping up during this emergency these federal benefits. Is your Armed Services Committee looking into this?
Yes, and it's deeply concerning because our National Guard members have been putting themselves at risk to keep us safe, and they deserve our support. The idea that President Trump would pull them off the front lines and cut their deployment just to deny them benefits is not only unpatriotic, but heartless. So I think the White House is backing off a little bit of this misguided decision. So I'm going to call for hearings, and I'm going to make sure that people understand that this is absolutely wrong and that they fight back against it and push back against it. Because we've had 40,000 National Guard members performing coronavirus relief across the country, and all of them deserve the benefits that they've earned.
And yes, last I saw this morning, there was a whiff of the administration possibly about to succumb to pressure and extend that deployment for another month. And since this came from Politico, this is what journalistic scrutiny and then congressional oversight by people like you and your colleagues on the Armed Services Committee, oversight of the executive branch can accomplish, even if they fire all the inspectors general. So there is that.
Yeah. This is obviously an administration that's afraid of oversight and accountability. And so in every one of these instances, whether it's the IG for the State Department or IGs across the government, the Trump administration fires them because they don't want any oversight. It's outrageous. And I hope people understand how important these issues are for the next election. It's one of the reasons why I want to flip the Senate, hold the House, and defeat Trump.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, we always appreciate you coming on with us. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. Take care.